if you move in time up to the end of the 1980s, during this, say, regroup in time, what takes place in the beginning of the 1990s that we have now something called the autonomous chapters of the American India movement and what's called National AIM? We have almost, there's becomes a fission that takes place.
It's just a split, and probably get yelled at by anybody that hears this, but I think it was just a family feud. Leadership, they've been bickering since 68. Mm-hmm. They were bickering amongst themselves and bickering and bickering and bickering. And, you know, you always have, if you have two chiefs, one's going to not like the way the other chief is running things. And you had, several different leaderships, and they were just, were not agreeing on how things should be handled and how things should be run and what direction AIM's going. And so they just started getting wider and wider and yelling at each other. And they had one camp with followers, and the other ones had their camp with followers. And
we had a tribunal.
Yeah, it split. And, you know, there was always allegations of, he did this, that, and the other. And then the other one would come back with, be like, he took this money and did that and the other. So, you know, they're up. I'm sure that most of the allegations were unfounded.
I was going to say, I was interested in bringing Clyde Bellacourt to campus. When I first came to William & Mary, I think it must have been about 1995, and I got calls from tribal leaders in Virginia saying, "Don't you dare, we'll never speak to you again." And I thought, obviously, stuff going on internally, and just the local, some of the Virginia chiefs saying, "We don't want anything to do with AIM. We don't. It's too negative, and we got our own problems we're trying to fight." And I wonder, well, couldn't that help? Couldn't help to have AIM on your side? And they said no. So is this sort of the time when there was this various factionalism, but yet you guys represent a point in which you were active in a Virginia chapter. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that Virginia had a chapter till recently.
Doing this tribunal split, doing this autonomous split, the autonomous AIM, which is what we were, and then you had National AIM, and basically what happened was, I'm not sure what happened with National AIM, what their guidelines were, but we started, our chapters got started, and it was for a drug and alcohol free movement. You know, one of the things for being involved in an autonomous chapter, you had to be drug and alcohol free.
How did it get to Virginia? How did Richmond as an urban center, or Washington as an urban center, or Norfolk?
Santos, Hawk's Blood.
I think it started as a Peltier support group.
Yeah.
And people were coming through as various Indians were coming through town as for things that the support group were doing, and then I think from there they're like, "Oh, we should start a chapter." So, and then Santos was the one that started the chapter here in Richmond.
Was he from here?
No, he's from Texas. AIM, Thomas Chapter American Movement
in Texas.
Yeah.
So how did the following go in terms of your organization? You elected officers. How did you recruit? Well, did you guys, did it come up out of the support group?
It was, from the beginning we thought the AIM group should be Indian. And I think even the non-Indians that were there, they were like, yeah, we'll just stay in the support group.
Yeah.
And then everybody that was in AIM was also in the support group.
What did you set up as goals for Virginia? For your communities in this area, what was AIM? If as an autonomous chapter, what does it mean to be an autonomous chapter as opposed from being National AIM? How did that?
Well, as was stated earlier, Virginia Indians do not like AIM.
Yeah.
We try to do work in this community. We try to own a Mattapinap, a monkey.
So you're telling me that there's more Indians in Virginia?
Oh yeah.
Than just the tribes that are recognized in the state?
Yeah. So. My family's from North Carolina. We're Halawasapony, okay? And then we're pretty big in our tribe. Our tribal last names are well established in our tribe. Well, I can tell you half my family members live in Richmond, Virginia. It's the economy. There's no work in it. And in, you know, Hollister, North Carolina, Warren County, you know, Halifax County, there's no work. Indians aren't going to go where they have work. That's why you got, you know, talk back in the 70s, you got Pine Ridgers living in Denver, Colorado. You know, it's the choice of living in a dirt poor community or going and making money and living in something halfway decent. And everybody wants better for themselves and kids, of course, you know. But, I mean, you got Chris here, Cherokee, you know, living in Richmond, Virginia, you know. Yeah, I mean, there's no more, you know, there's no boundaries. We don't see the Powhatan little, you know, land symbols up saying you can't come across this line no more.
So you guys had a goal to serve a wider community than just, say, the Virginia Indians. You were looking at...
Well, the offer was definitely for, I mean, the way I interpreted the autonomous versus national was that the national, everything was a trickle down from the national. They would decide the issues that the different chapters would work on and send it out to the chapters, and the autonomous chapters were basically that. We chose what we wanted to work on, where we wanted to go.
So it's a lot more localized control.
Yeah, more localized. So and that's what really drew me to it, was not having somebody in Minnesota telling me what I should be concerned about in the Indian community, and whether or not our problems were big enough. Anyhow, so from that perspective, we were, you know, we're autonomous and we would choose our issues, but, you know, like we've already said several times, the Virginia Indians wanted nothing to do with us.
They're afraid to rock the boat.
It's just an entirely different culture. It's the Eastern culture, and Eastern Indians culture has been,
like I said earlier,
dominated for 400 years, and the Western cultures and.
And they were afraid of the militancy aspect of it.
In 1890, the Western Wars were still going on. So it was like less than 100 years that they... Whereas the East Coast was 400 years.
So what did Virginia do? What type of activities or
what did the chapter
issues?
Do?
Or what did the chapter decide was going to be one of the main types of of projects or issues or things that was going to motivate the membership to go in different directions? Because you guys traveled a lot. You guys weren't just here in Virginia. You were, I mean, you were in working in partnership with Denver, Colorado AIM, Texas AIM, Florida AIM. California, how did all this transpire into these are going to be our agendas, these are going to be our issues? And how did you get linked back up with all these other autonomous chapters?
Well, there was a tribunal held, and it was the separation of the two, the national and autonomous chapters of the American Indian War.
When you say tribunal, you mean an official meeting?
Yeah, Vernon and Clyde Bellacourt was put on trial for different charges by the people in a tribunal. And it was held in California, and in chapters involved with bringing them up on these charges to come face the people and, you know, see, well, okay, well, whether you're guilty or not.
And the people were the people of AIM.
Well, it was Colorado AIM, Dakota AIM, Florida AIM, Illinois AIM, New Mexico, Northeast Oklahoma, Northern California, Northeast AIM, Ohio AIM, Southeast AIM, Southern California AIM, you got Southern Ute AIM, Virginia AIM, Texas AIM, Wounded Knee AIM, and Whips His Tail AIM, Montana. That's the AIM chapters that were involved in the tribunal. After the tribunal, we had a Wounded Knee conference. And
do you remember where in California this was held?
San Francisco.
Oh, okay, it makes sense. Yeah. In the Oakland area, where, sure. Yeah.
And then we had the, well, of course, before we went to this tribunal, of course, and the tribunal was held
November 93.
And what was the result of the tribunal?
The result of the tribunal was we needed to have a Wounded Knee conference.
And what was the conference going to be about?
The conference was held at Wounded Knee. It was decided that the conference could be held at Wounded Knee, and anyone could come to the conference. Anyone. And we basically camped out at the Ice family, which is right across from Wounded Knee, where the occupation took place. We camped out on their property. And anyone could come. It was on the internet. It was in Indian times. It was, you know, well publicized. Anyone could come.
What were the issues that were being addressed at the conference? What did the goal of the conference hope to accomplish?
I think it was the future of AIM, to see where we're going.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people, you know, like a lot of the people were complaining because, you know, people that had, you know, not as strong as the AIM chapter, you know, just four or five members that were close to National AIM. A lot of these National AIM guys were going in and bullying their way around and saying, you're going to do things our way. You know, and like Chris was saying, you know, here's a, you know, Vernon and Clyde, you know, and Dennis Banks up there in Minnesota or whatever, and they're telling guys down in Florida, okay, you need to go here and do this. How do they know what's going on there? You know, that's what we liked about being autonomous. We knew what was going on. We could go work on what we wanted to work on, you know.
What were some of the issues and rights issues, I guess, were some of the things that you guys were concerned about for Virginia or locally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did a stint with prisoners' rights, Native prisoners not being allowed to sweat and even have a pipe in there. And just so we did a lot of work trying to get...
Is this a state or federal prison?
State,
or
on a state level.
Yeah.
State level, yeah. It never happened.
Yeah, a lot of red tape.
Yeah, we had a couple of candlelight visuals. We planned a big rally. We had actually a candlelight visual / protest at the Governor's Center Mansion, 94. And
there's the demonstration for Eddie Hatcher also.
Yeah, we had Eddie. Yeah.
North Carolina.
Yeah.
Who was Eddie Hatcher?
He was another political prisoner.
All right, so you guys held vigils at the Governor's Mansion.
Yeah.
What were those for? You guys had a rally there. What was that for?
I'd like to address that one for a minute because that's a real funny incident. You know, me and Chris here, Renee Stilday had us involved in that. She was part of the Leonard Peltier support group. We actually went to the prison, me and Chris, and met with George Stilday to talk with him.
Who was George Stilday?
He was a Ojibwe Indian. He was convicted on bank robbery. He's federal charges, and he was in a state prison. He was a federal Indian, federal carded Indian, that was being denied his religious rights.
Mm. And the strategy they were using was every time he ended up in Virginia because anytime he was anywhere else, they'd get a support group going for him and start to bring up these issues, so they'd transfer him. After going state to state to state, he ended up in Virginia for a while.
Now, give it, George did do, you know, George hit a doctor and other things when he was in prison, you know. I mean, you know, he's a prisoner. He's there for a reason, you know. But the basis of the prison system is supposed to be to, rehabilitate under religious purposes or whatever, you know.
So they can't deny him the religious freedoms.
Do. They do. Still to this day, the state of Virginia does not have a sweat lodge in their prison system for American Indians. But they still have the, you know, other rights, you know. They have Christianity there, they have Muslims there, they have, you know, they even special diets, you know. And it's not put 12 sticks, 16 sticks in a sweat lodge. That doesn't cost anything. You can walk over in the woods and cut them down.
So the vigil was in support of prisoners' rights.
Yeah, these prisoners have their rights. And it was real funny, the night that we had this visual, me and Chris had went to the prison and we had met with George, and there was another inmate that was communicating with us too, but I cannot remember his name right now.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But what happened was Renee hadn't heard. Renee was a direct communicator with George, of course, with her being married to him. And she didn't hear anything from George. And we had the visual. The governor was supposed to meet with us. The governor brought up the fact that he didn't have any Indians in the state of Virginia in the state prison system that were federal recognized. And we said, oh no, yes you do. He said, oh no, I don't. And a couple of days later, George finally got in touch with Renee finally when he got somewhere where he could, you know, when they allowed him to call. And he said, couple of days before y'all had that visual day, took us out in busloads, took us to the airports, and he said it flew us out. He said all the Indians were taken out of state for prisons.
So before this vigil, before AIM held this vigil on the governor's lawn, somebody got wind of it at the governor's office.
Yeah.
They put all federal Indians that were in the prison system on separate transfers, shipped them out of state to other prisons. So when you had the vigil, the governor came and said,
he was scot-free. We don't have no Indians in it. We don't have no federal Indians in our state facility.
We had no federal Indians in our state prisons.
Yeah. No federal. Now, what is a state Indian? Do we just not recognize them?
Right.
That's something that Virginia Indians needs to talk about.